Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 12:46 PM. That is Pacific Standard Time. Today is January 22nd. Well, over the weekend there was a great deal of drama, both in Europe and in the USA. First in the USA about the government shutdown and what all that represented for markets, but those fears have been allayed today with the Senate voting to reopen the government as of tomorrow. But what is interesting is that the VIX fell on Friday and then it fell again today. So this is pulling back from this 12 area, and it had held this move up to 12 for just a smidgen longer than it had back in November. Well, now we're starting to see volatility come back down again, and this continues to represent a market that has I think taken a very sanguine attitude to just about everything that's thrown at it. So when we look at the S&P 500, for example, then it paused for 4 days and then broke upwards. Back in December, it paused for approximately 8 days and then broke upwards. So the size of the reactions is getting smaller. The duration of the reactions is getting smaller, and the pace of the advance is therefore picking up. And that continues to remain the case for the Dow Jones as well, where we get these very small reactions. And of course, that is all a factor of why volatility is so low. But there is almost a symbiotic relationship between these two measures, that the volatility is low because the reactions in the stock market are so minor, and the reactions in the stock market are so minor because volatility is so low. We know that volatility is low for a range of factors. One, of course, is because of ETF buying, which is earnings agnostic. It's a momentum strategy that is highly dependent on the continued performance of large caps. But, for example, when we look at the best performers within the S&P 500 today, then the big technology shares are reasonably well represented if we just cycle down a little bit. Netflix is in there, and some of the energy companies have picked up in the last 10 minutes since the last time I looked at this. And of course, part of the reason for that is because oil prices are still really very steady. And this is a very shallow reaction in oil prices. If we look at the course of this trend since June of last year, then reactions of less than $5, but generally somewhere between $3.50 and $4, have been the norm. And this reaction isn't even half that. So far, this has been a very mild reaction in the region of a big psychological level, but that's all it looks like. It really does look like we're going to see additional upside for the oil price. Now, if we look at the continuous commodity index, which is unweighted and therefore does not have nearly as much of an energy component, well, then it is pushing back up towards the upper side of what is an 18-month range. This is a pretty lengthy period of right-hand extension following the type 2 massive reaction against the prevailing downtrend that we saw in early 2016. But it is the reason for this underperformance is not because of energy or indeed because of the industrial commodities, but rather because of the agriculturals. And the agricultural market remains very much range bound and in many cases still trending lower. Well, we don't have a great deal of evidence just yet to support a view that they're about to break higher and close that differential. But there is certainly the potential for that as we approach the latter stages of what is still a very powerful cyclical bull market. And because we're still in a period of synchronized global economic expansion, then that's generally beneficial for stock markets. When we look at what's going on in Europe, well, one thing that is, I think, quite interesting is the developments that we continue to see within the Brexit negotiations. And the pound was really quite firm today, and it is closing above 114 for the first time since December relative to the euro. And we have seen that the pound and the euro have been in a very choppy range for the last 4 months, but the amplitude of this range is really quite a bit less volatile than what we've been treated to with the pound and the euro over the course of the last few years. And It really does need to sustain a move above 114 to confirm that we're back in a period of pound demand dominance. But considering that the peaks back in 2015 were above 140 and we're currently around 114, there is ample potential for additional upside here, even if we are going to be in a lengthy base formation, which could be anywhere between 105 and 120. Well, there's still potential for additional upside here. I continue to think that there is going to be a negotiated settlement, and the EU will not get everything that it wants, and neither will the UK. But the EU has got a massive hole in its budget that is represented by the absence of the UK's contributions. And there isn't a great deal of appetite within the EU for any government to increase their direct payments to the EU. So anything that the UK contributes will ameliorate that situation, and therefore it is the big question as to exactly what can the UK get out of it all. With the pound really quite firm, the FTSE 100 has been relatively steady. It appreciated really quite considerably all the way through December, and we're in a period of consolidation now, which has so far taken place above the underlying range. There isn't a great deal of evidence yet that this period of consolidation is over, and it still has quite an overextension relative to the trend mean, approximately 300 points. So we could see some additional pause of consolidation, but this continues to look like a recovery situation, considering that it broke up and out of that 17-year range almost 2 years ago now. But this continues to look like a recovery situation broadly. Germany still does not have a government, which I think helps to put the government shutdown in the US into at least some perspective. And the DAX index is pushing back up towards the peak that we saw in November. And when we think about what is it that is pushing that higher, well, is it on optimism that the SPD may in fact support a Merkel government, or is it rather that we are still in a period of synchronized global economic expansion and that purchasing managers' indices are doing really very well indeed? That when we look at, for example, there are really quite impressive graphics that have been circulating, and when we think about where is the growth coming from, well, we can see here that the euro area is doing very well in terms of the purchasing managers' indices, but the broader point is that they are trending higher just about everywhere. And it isn't simply in the large markets, but it is also in a number of the smaller emerging markets. So this is highly supportive of the view that we are in a powerful period of synchronized global economic expansion, and that is helping to underline demand for not just the US or indeed Europe, but just about everywhere else as well. So, for example, the mainland Chinese market was in positive territory again in here today, and that is extending its advance on the Shanghai A shares. The banking sector was also in positive territory, but the Shanghai Property Index was somewhat. Excuse me, the banks were not in positive territory; they were down ever so slightly. I was looking at the weekly chart before I pulled up that particular chart. The Shanghai Property Index, on the other hand, I mixed the two up. The Shanghai Property Index was in positive territory, and this continues to represent a very powerful breakout from a really quite well-defined range where we still had that progression of higher reaction lows within it. So this is, I think, really quite a bullish chart. And despite the fact that we continue to see fears expressed about the state of the bad loans portfolios in various banks in China, the reality is that the stock market is continuing to advance and that the economy is responding favorably to the return to growth of the global economy. And that is also benefiting India, where the Nifty was up an additional 70 points, and it is extending its breakout from the most recent of these ranges, and there is an almost 950 point overextension relative to the trend mean, but there's no sign that it's about to be unwound anytime soon either. I continue to expect that India has got many good years in front of it, considering that there has been so much in terms of the of transformation in terms of the economy, that in terms of the digitization that has yet to really take place, that it only just started off with the rollout of 4G and the completion of collecting biometric data from every person in the country and giving every family a bank account. These are massive changes that are not yet reflected in the stock market. That is going to take time, and the potential for additional upside I don't think can be understated. Then when we look at what's going on in Japan, well, the dollar got some respite in here today. So the Nikkei has been pretty steady for much of the last couple of weeks. So I think it is worth taking a look at what's going on in the yen. And the yen did get, excuse me, the dollar got up to 111 intraday today. If we get some upside follow through for the dollar tomorrow, well, then that would begin to take some of the fear out that we're going to see some substantial strengthening in the yen. I continue to think that that is an unlikely scenario, that Japan is the only country in the world right now running both monetary and fiscal stimulus, and they are going to be among the last to remove it. But that dollar strength has filtered through into some pressure coming into the precious metals. Now, gold was in mildly positive territory in here today, and it continues to range below this $1,350 area. But platinum posted a downside key reversal, and it didn't quite close on the low, and it is closing above $1,000, but it absolutely needs to hold the majority of what was an impressive advance off that low in the middle of December. When we look at this on a weekly chart, it was rather hanging out for some pause of consolidation in the region of these peaks that we saw in 2017, and there is certainly a short-term overbought condition. I think what we need to see is that it can demonstrate support somewhere between $1,000 and $950. If it can do that, then we are back in a demand-dominated environment and we can give recovery the benefit of the doubt. But it will have to demonstrate that it can sustain a rally, and that would, I think, really help to drive home the potential for recovery in the precious metal markets generally, considering that both silver and platinum tend to be high beta trades on gold. The relative inertia that we're seeing in silver may be a relatively positive outcome. What is also interesting is that the total holdings of gold in ETFs has, well, it did break out to new highs on Friday, and it has not pulled back in a dynamic fashion. So what that suggests is that there is still a tailwind for gold prices, and that perhaps that platinum, just because it is just that bit more overextended relative to the trend mean, is more susceptible to some pause and consolidation around these levels. Well, then when we think about the government bond markets, well, the 10-year treasury is at new recovery highs, and it has rallied rather impressively over the course of the last 2 weeks, and it's at the highest level that we've seen in at least the last few years. Now, there is a short-term overbought condition, but at the same time, this was a more than year-long range, so we do have potential for upside here, and it could accelerate up out of this range and potentially go all the way up towards that 3% level. What I think we are starting to see is the bond market beginning to take fright at the prospect of more interest rate hikes and deficit spending. And it would be natural for bond yields to trend higher in that kind of environment. And of course, then if we also look at what's feeding this low volatility, well, I've already spoken about ETF buying. Then You also have the people that are going short the VIX as a way of generating yield in a very low yield environment, simply by selling time and betting that the options will expire worthless. But then, of course, you also have the risk parity strategy, and by going long bonds and excuse me, going by going long equities and short bonds, then there's still this high correlation here. So when we eventually get a turnaround, then that is going to have a flip side effect on the bond market, but not yet. There's no evidence that this very impressive advance that we're seeing in the equity market is anywhere close to peaking. There has certainly been a clear absence of downward dynamics, and most particularly, they haven't been held through even 24 hours, not to mind over 2 or 3 days. And what I also find interesting is if we look at a long-term chart of the US home builders, that it certainly accelerated higher from about early 2004 all the way through until towards the end of 2005. And then we had a massive reaction against the prevailing trend for, so we had the type 1 with type 2 right-hand extension. Then we had this rally all the way back up to the peak, and then it collapsed. So this index has gone up even faster in the last 2 months than it has at really any time, other than the absolute bubble peak back in 2005. But we also have to consider that it does look better supported at this level. That certainly it is becoming overextended relative to the trend mean, and there is the potential for some pause of consolidation. But so far, it continues to do well. Now, certainly can see the flow of leaflets coming through my letterbox has certainly increased with real estate agents becoming progressively more enthused, and the time it's taking to sell houses in the $1.6 million to $2 million dollar range is down to about 7 days. So a significant number of those homes are selling at about $100,000 over asking. Now, what that says is that we are certainly reaching a rather fevered pace of sales, at least in West Los Angeles. But what it also suggests is that people are spending the tax money right away. And when we think about what the ramifications of the change in the deductions and the tax cuts is going to have, well, it's not really going to roll through until taxes are paid for 2018 earnings in early 2019. And what that suggests is that we have a year before the full ramifications of those tax cuts really hit home, which are likely to be positive for the lower end of the market and perhaps less positive for the upper end of the market, because of the impact that the removal of deducting high value homes is going to have. So when we think about what are the potential headwinds, this is an index that is accelerating higher, and it has completed a range. So we do anticipate that when a range breaks out, then ranges are explosions waiting to happen, and we're certainly getting this strengthening of the market. Eventually, it will roll over, and that rollover is likely to be represented by a clear downward dynamic. And in the absence of a clear downward dynamic, which could potentially be, I think, greeted by or at least coincide with an uptick in unemployment figures, and again, we have no evidence of that right now, then we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. So I think we are entering this period where there is a significant risk or potential opportunity that this market is going to accelerate higher. And we have evidence of that already on the primary Wall Street indices. These markets are accelerating higher. And as long as that remains the case, then we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. But this is when we need to be most alert to the loss of consistency. So if we see a loss of consistency, which would in this case be represented by larger reactions, well, then that is when we need to begin to start asking serious questions and begin to be thinking more about exit strategies than long strategies. So I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.